The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today with me on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Our country remembers 9/11, but elite media wants it to go away.
We can't sugarcoat 9/11. It's not about grieving, though grieving is a part of it.
Taliban leaders get disinvited to Camp David.
The Taliban had reached an agreement in principle, and they immediately began to backtrack and renege on their commitments, not surprising.
Star quarterback Drew Brees gets blindsided, this time off the field.
They really have crushed him. They're telling him he's a hypocrite, and it's even beyond, I would suggest, a mafia-style thing.
And Europe can't bring itself to declare Hezbollah for what they are, terrorists.
To me, it's just fundamental. You look at what's happening across Europe with Hezbollah garnering money and using that money to spread terror, and we've got to stop it. We've got to be able to squeeze it and use domestic laws to shut it down and to find the financial networks and to stop it.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And let me invite you now to join us by video. And, of course, follow me on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. Last Wednesday marked the 18th year since 9/11. One wants to say anniversary, but those who were there don't think of it that way. Anniversaries are typically remembrances of a happy occasion. 9/11 was all about death. My colleague Kirk Schlichter, who sat in for me Wednesday on the Hugh Hewitt Show, will never forget 9/11.
Look, this is 9/11. This is an important day. This is a hallowed day. And sadly, this is also a day that has exposed our mainstream media's, what's the right word, gutlessness? Let's go through a little sequence here of events that took place on Twitter, where I want you to see how this evolved. So at about 6:41 a.m., that would be Eastern Time, the New York Times tweeted the following: 18 years have passed since airplanes took aim and brought down the World Trade Center. Today's families will once again gather and grieve at the site where more than 2,000 people died. Do you see a problem with that? Producer Dwayne, do you detect a problem with 18 years have passed since airplanes took aim and brought down the World Trade Center?
Those damnable sentient airplanes.
Those airplanes. Darn you, airplanes! Now, a friend of our show took this apart in a tweet where he pointed out, after the New York Times said, oops, we better change the headline.
Scrub that tweet,
got rid of it. Many people pointed out that, no, not airplanes. So the New York Times changed it again. That's right. Twitter is now editing the New York Times and, frankly, doing a better job of it than the editors of the New York Times. And I also object to the theme, remembering those lost 18 years ago. It's important to remember the people they murdered. Okay? No one was lost. They were murdered by fundamentalist Islamic terrorists. Yeah, that's important to remember them. But what's also important is to recommit to victory over fundamentalist Islamic terrorism, and to acknowledge the sacrifice of people who died fighting them afterwards, and who died rescuing other Americans during the 9/11 attacks. You remember the firefighters and the police and the EMTs who ran into burning skyscrapers. They kept running in after one tower fell. They're still going in the other to rescue fellow Americans. You remember them. We can't sugarcoat 9/11. It's not about grieving, though grieving is a part of it.
Earlier this week, President Trump called off a scheduled Camp David meeting with the Taliban leadership. The meeting was intended to move along negotiations for a ceasefire in Afghanistan, which, if successful, could signal the homecoming of U.S. troops stationed there. As expected, the president took some flack for this, and many conservatives were surprised, some even disappointed. I invited one of my favorites from Capitol Hill, Senator Tom Cotton, a former military officer, to help us sort this out on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Now, you're in an interesting position of being among the most influential senators when it comes to President Trump, and probably the closest friend that Mike Pompeo has in a town that's better known for dogs than friends. What is your advice to them, to the extent that you can say, about the ongoing possibility of a conversation with the Taliban, whether in the United States or abroad, about peace in Afghanistan?
Well, Hugh, we've been having negotiations with the Taliban for some time. My understanding is what happened last week is that the Taliban had reached an agreement in principle with Zalmay and Qatar, but then they immediately began to backtrack and renege on their commitments, not surprising. As Mike Pompeo said on the Sunday morning shows, we don't trust the Taliban, but verify their commitments. And when we couldn't verify they were upholding their commitments, the president said not only was he not going to meet with their leaders, but he was going to end the talks altogether. Look, ultimately, we'll have to have negotiations if we want, and we can't take the pressure off the Taliban. Although the Taliban has continued to blow up car bombs across Afghanistan, we've killed over 1,000 Taliban fighters in recent weeks in Afghanistan. That's the way you get a successful political negotiation.
What level of troops do you think we need to maintain in Afghanistan long term, like we do in South Korea, in order to make that country a forward operating base in the region and to assure stability for the Afghan government?
Depends in part on conditions on the ground. The challenge that Afghanistan poses from a counterterrorism standpoint is its geography. I think we can bring our troops levels down significantly from where they are now, but we have to remember the highest concentration of foreign terrorist fighters anywhere in the world is in Afghanistan still.
This coming October 3rd is Bring Your Bible to School Day. This will be the event's fifth year and has been championed by Focus on the Family, a radio ministry based in Colorado Springs. This year, Focus learned that Drew Brees, one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL, was supportive of this event. Here's my colleague Sebastian Gorka with Jim Daly, president of Focus on the Family.
This is such an important story for what it shows about what is going on in America today. This individual, Drew Brees, my understanding is he did a video to you, a video for you about a very, very controversial topic. Bringing your Bible to school. What were the consequences, Jim Daly? First things first, thank you for everything you've done. I think you've been at Focus on the Family for quite some time before you became its new president. Thank you for your work. Tell us about the story and the reaction to this wonderful video.
Sure. About 10 days ago, I heard that Drew Brees had provided, on his own initiative, a video clip of 22 seconds just saying and supporting the Bring Your Bible to School program. This is the fifth year. The first year, we had 8,000 students. Last year, we had 650,000 students participate. And it's just real simple. You bring your Bible to school, and at lunchtime or free time, you can share with other kids about it. Some of the junior high, elementary school, high school kids, they'll do a Bible study at lunch. It's completely within legal parameters to do that. And so that's something we've promoted. So to hear that Drew Brees wanted to do a 22-second video, we were thrilled. And so he did it. And then the LGBTQ community were upset with him that he had worked with Focus on the Family because they perceive us to be, as the New York Times and Washington Post and others call us, an anti-gay group, which is totally baloney. I mean, as a Christian organization, we're pro-everybody, but we've got to live by the book. And, you know, we're followers, not editors of the Bible.
I love that phrase, followers and not editors. So what has the fallout been for Drew Brees since that video became popular?
Well, I mean, if you go online, social media, they have the other side, if you want to state it that way. I mean, they really have crushed him. They're telling him he's a hypocrite. He needs to ask for an apology. And, you know, he needs to fess up that he's not done the right thing here. He's on the wrong side of history, et cetera, et cetera. But it's just an onslaught. And I think one of the things that I've noticed in that community, particularly meaning the LGBTQ community, they have really perfected the art of the shakedown. And it's even beyond, I would suggest, a mafia style thing. I was watching the clip from Toronto with the opening of Chick-fil-A And it was grotesque. I mean, people standing in line to support Chick-fil-A and people opposing them, F-bombing them and throwing horrible insults at them just to get a chicken sandwich.
Yeah, on the light side, on the light side, there is a viral video from that Montreal Chick-fil-A opening where there's one of these crazy people screaming like from a lunatic asylum, and this very patient individual saying, "Dude, it's a chicken sandwich." It's quite the viral video. So, but tell us what this means for you, for your work at Focus on the Family. If somebody had started a program, bring Karl Marx's Das Kapital to the school, there would have been no backlash, right?
Oh, probably not. And, you know, we started this 4 years ago for that very reason, that we thought, working with Alliance Defending Freedom, they did a one-sheet legal prep that the kids can download from the website. And when the teacher or the school administrator comes, and we've got plenty of dozens and dozens of stories of kids where their teachers have confiscated the Bible, and this little, you know, 13-year-old girl will show them the one-slip legal brief, and the teacher will look at it, read it, and say, "Oh, okay, I guess you have the right to keep this at your desk." This is how far we've gotten in the culture. We had one little girl, Sebastian, who was a 12-year-old girl, and she was very intimidated to do it, but she wanted to do it. She took her Bible to the class, and she said the other 25 kids in her class all had their Bible on their desk, but they didn't know they were Christians because they feel so intimidated to even talk about it in public. And that's the beginning, as you well know, coming out of fascism. Doesn't that sound like the beginning of fascism?
Yeah, when the Bible is being banned or people are ashamed to actually have the good book in their possession in public, that way leads to the real concentration camps and to the death camps. Jim Daly, you can follow him, Daly Focus, D-A-L-Y Focus on Twitter. In the last minute we have with you, just share some words for our listeners with regards to Focus on the Family and how they can read up more about your work.
Sure. Well, one thing we're doing, just to finish that story, I'm down here in the Big Easy. I've got my Drew Brees jersey. I'm coming to the game. Several people down here have planned for the fans to bring their Bible to the game. So I think that's an awesome response.
Fabulous.
From defense into offense. But Focus on the Family is very simple. We have a wonderful radio program and podcast. We have about 7 million listeners. And we're all about marriage and parenting. That's what we do. And for some reason, that's become very controversial in this country. With the exception that we're talking about traditional marriage, marriage between one man and one woman, and some people are very offended by that, even though that's 97% of the country.
Coming up.
To me, it's just fundamental. You look at what's happening across Europe with Hezbollah garnering money and using that money to spread terror, and we've got to stop it. We've got to be able to squeeze it and use domestic laws to shut it down and to find the financial networks and to stop it.
Hezbollah in the crosshairs. Ambassador Rick Grinnell, when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Our program is coming in today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. They are preparing grounded leaders who are impacting public policy and serving in the public square. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. Rick Grinnell, a longtime U.S. spokesman at the United Nations, has recently been serving as U.S. ambassador to Germany. Among other things, Rick has spent hours demonstrating to Chancellor Merkel that the Trump Doctrine will work. Rick was recently Sebastian Gorka's guest on America First.
Rick, you've been doing an amazing job teaching, demonstrating to the world, especially our European allies, what the Trump Doctrine is, how everything changed on January the 20th. But right now you've got really concrete work to do. Is it true that the German administration, the chancellorship, is looking to potentially, finally, designate Hezbollah as a terrorist organization?
Well, we certainly hope so. I think this is an issue that we have been at the U.S. Embassy in Berlin. We've been making a priority since I got here. To me, it's just fundamental. You look at what's happening across Europe with Hezbollah garnering money and using that money to spread terror. And we've got to stop it. We've got to be able to squeeze it and use domestic laws to shut it down and to find the financial networks and to stop it. And so we've made the case. You know, the first, I think, reason for not designating Hezbollah as a terrorist organization was the Germans said that they didn't want to do anything that would affect the Lebanese government. And we've explained that not only do the Americans give money to Lebanon on a bilateral basis, but we're the largest donor, and we still can designate Hezbollah as a terrorist organization. We're hoping that the Germans will step out and step away from the EU, so to speak, but we believe that the largest economy in Europe, the German government, should.
I could tell that our European allies, our colleagues, didn't quite understand what Donald Trump is trying to do and how he's really attempting to rebuild the alliance structure in a way that is more effective for the 21st century. Do our European allies better understand now what your boss and what our president is doing, Rick Grenell?
I asked for this job in Berlin because after my 8 years at the UN, I realized we needed a very strong German partner. When we talk about the E3, the French, the British, and the Germans, in many ways, the Germans were the ones not participating in many of the West issues. For instance, Syria, the French and the British joined, but the Germans did not. And so I wanted to come here and explain that Donald Trump was different. I've tried to explain in very clear language why we want these policies to be innately all of us in the West pushing for.
Rick, what is the most important thing from your vantage point as the president's man that is not understood by our friends and allies across the world that they need to know about President Donald J. Trump?
I think that the one thing that we try to explain consistently, and I still think we have work to do, is that we are very serious about the threats that are coming into Europe. I don't think that the threat perception, for instance, in Germany, is as high as it should be. That threat from Russia is not as prominent as it should be in Germany. I also would argue the same threat from Iran is not the same threat that we would see. So threat perception and lack thereof is one of the top issues that we have. Because there are 34,000 American troops stationed in Germany and the Germans aren't paying the 2% obligation to NATO, we think that there's a comfort level that that needs to be confronted, and that if they would look at the threats around them and perceive them in the same way that we do, and that's why we have a large defense budget, that they would make different policy decisions.
For more of Sebastian Gorka's conversation with Ambassador Grenell, go to townhallreview.com. This past Tuesday, there was a special election in North Carolina's 9th Congressional District, a district that voted for Donald Trump in 2016 by a 12% margin. Democrats heralded this week's election as a bellwether for Trump's doom. The Republican, Dan Bishop, won, holding the seat for the GOP by a narrow several thousand votes. Kirk Schlichter sorted through the implications of this result with American Greatness editor Liz Scheld on The Hugh Hewitt Show.
Let's move on to politics.
Okay.
North Carolina 9. We were promised an upset. Where's my upset?
Let me tell you, we're not going to be hearing any talk today about the bellwether election in North Carolina, about Trump's doom, so that's off the table.
It was close, but it wasn't as close as the last election in 2018. I think that it was 900 votes separated them.
It's always interesting in these special elections because it gives the Democrats a discrete target to focus all of their millions and tens of millions of dollars from their progressive donors into one place. And so they just shoved money into this because they thought it was going to be, you know, a bellwether of Trump's doom or his imminent defeat. And it made Trump look great because, you know, he was there Monday rallying the troops and he delivered.
How do we get these Republicans woke?
Yeah, I think it's just going to be like kind of a Darwinian thing. I think
the survival of the not dumbest.
Well, It is, because there's a massive industry that props these people up. It's not just a question of sitting down with someone and having a rational discussion. When you've taken millions of dollars over the course of your career from, you know, an open borders lobby or from big tech surveillance capitalist operations, you can't really change, can you? You're owned already. So what needs to happen is they just need to be repudiated at the ballot box. We're not really at a place where it's just a question of explaining, no. They want immigration. You know, they want an immigration policy that protects them. They want to see our America's treasure invested in America before it's invested around the planet. So it's not that simple. It's a question of having years of obligations built up to these special interests that don't represent the public.
Let's move on. There's a little bit of news coming out of the White House, a little personnel change. John Bolton is out. Who's going in? Let me toss a name out there, see what you think. Robert C. O'Brien, a woke conservative. What do you think?
I say yes. I mean, Trump tends to hire people not for jobs, but as like project managers, right? Like they seem to be a good idea at the time, but not necessarily for this larger policy positions he holds, because I'm not sure, you know, Trump is very non-traditional, and people who work in government are used to having a very traditional path laid out for them with an extensive policy platform. Trump isn't really like that, although it's obvious that Bolton wasn't going to last long, because Trump is not a hawk. He's not aggressive. So I think anyone who goes in there that, you know, understands that it's not going to be a traditional job, you don't want someone coming from the foreign policy machine, because those people are almost all very aggressive, interested in perpetuating some more American wars. So anyone who understands what Trump was elected for, and a major thing he was elected for was to get us out of these insane entanglements we have all over the planet, then yeah, I support that.
Coming up.
What they've done is they've come up with this term called conversion therapy, and they throw everything into it. Crazy things that used to be done 50 years ago. Well, in that same group, they're putting pastoral care, you know, private conversations you might want to have with your own pastor or counselor.
California's war on religious freedom, when Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt continues in a moment. Hey, thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Our podcast is sponsored by Alliance Defending Freedom. ADF provides help at no cost to those whose liberty is being violated, but they can't do it without your help. Call 800-691-8969. That's 800-691-8969. Or visit townhallreview.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. The California State Legislature works year-round, unlike their peers in many other states. In both houses of the state legislature, the Assembly and the Senate, Democrats now have a supermajority, and they have been doing the bidding of far-left Governor Gavin Newsom. But the dynamic might be shifting a bit. Lately, the legislature is proving itself more radical than the Golden State's hard-left governor. My colleague, Phil Cowan, host of the Phil Cowan Show on AM 1380, The Answer in Sacramento, recently spoke with Greg Burt, legislative director of California's Family Council.
Where does the law currently stand on getting your own children therapy for what you believe may be a mental disorder?
Well, therapy for minors under 18, it was banned a couple years ago. That's for getting professional help. Now, there are still counselors out there who are, you might find at a church, or unlicensed counselors who can still provide that type of counseling. But if they're licensed, they're not going to be able to help your child in any way with gender dysphoria, or even if they have unwanted same-sex attraction.
It's against the law for me to seek that kind of counseling for my 8-year-old.
That's right. And California was the first state to do that. And I think there's now 17 other states who followed along. And now, you know, the state is now pushing farther and farther and wants to ban it for adults, too. They tried it last year. There was a lot of opposition for a lot of religious groups, because it wasn't just professional counseling they were going after. They're going after anyone who was doing any counseling, you know, churches, you know, It's getting crazy. And it's not just what's happening here in California. It is a national movement. It's an international movement. We're talking to people in Canada, and I know Israel had an issue with this topic recently.
Well, I mean, we discussed this, what, a year, year and a half ago, when you brought a couple of folks in here from up in the Reading area, both of whom had voluntarily and individually sought counseling.
That's right.
That's counseling they would not be able to seek now, or as adults, would they?
Well, as adults, they would be able to.
Okay.
But, and you can still seek help from your own pastor or a non-licensed professional, you know, non-licensed counselor, but any professional counselor for minors, it's banned. But now the state, you know, this year there was a particular resolution that was a kind of a, came out of the bill last year that was going to ban conversion therapy as a consumer fraud. And it was pulled back, and instead they came out with a...
consumer fraud?
That's right. It was going to be considered consumer fraud if there was a fee exchanged in any way, right? If you went to a camp, and you paid for your child to have a camp, and during the camp, the, you know, the minister started saying something about that something that wasn't affirming to, you know, transgenderism, that was going to be considered, you know, some type of conversion therapy. Or if they helped some kid who was struggling with his gender.
Well, and increasingly, and as you point out, it's not just California, although we have been at the vanguard of a lot of these goofy ideas for a while. It is a nationwide issue now. They are trying to codify opinions that you are not allowed to have by law.
And that is one of the, listen, they know that they cannot come out and say, we're going to ban this particular opinion or idea from being promoted. So what they've done is they've come up with this term called conversion therapy, and they throw everything into it, from crazy things that used to be done 50 years ago that aren't being done anymore. Well, in that same group, they're putting, you know, pastoral care, you know, talk therapy. Private conversations you might want to have with your own, you know, own pastor or counselor. What's happening is they're turning an idea or words that are exchanged between two people as a product that you're selling now. But now what they're doing is now an idea is a product, and you know the state knows it can ban products. They ban products all the time.
Or they can regulate
and
them.
Regulate products all yeah. the time. So they simply have turned speech into a product, and because it's a product, we can protect people from it.
That's kind of become standard operating procedure for the left. That, Greg, it's not enough for you to say that's how you want to live your life. Fine, okay, but I'm pretty happy with who I am. And a traditional lifestyle and a traditional family unit and traditional morals, by God, Greg, they want to disallow you from believing those things now.
No, we had one senator on the Judiciary Committee said, you know, those values you're talking about aren't California values, and I want to see those values eradicate. We need to get rid of this conversion therapy idea in California. One way to think, right? Only one way to think about gender, only one way to think about sexual orientation, and all other views need to leave and stop or be silenced, right? I mean, how can we live in a free country? What does it mean to be a free country if it's not to allow other people to have different opinions than you and let them speak them and promote them and live them out in their lives?
Coming up.
Many religious nonprofits and charities are aiding and abetting what is essentially a criminal, illegal alien smuggling conspiracy.
Open Borders, Inc. by Michelle Malkin. When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. A short while ago, many of our American cities declared themselves sanctuary cities. This was an attempt by left-leaning city leadership to defy federal immigration law and shelter their undocumented populations from the enforcement of those laws. That defiance is now spreading to, quote, flyover cities, where sort of sanctuary anarchy is taking root. Michelle Malkin, author and commentator, has written extensively about the societal challenges flowing from illegal immigration and from this mindset. Her latest book is Open Borders, Inc. Malkin joined my colleague Mike Gallagher.
North Carolina jails despite ICE detainers. Now, this sanctuary city crap in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina. Michelle, we're not talking about Berkeley.
Yeah, Mike, I think it's such an important point because a lot of Americans are very complacent. They think, well, I don't live in Berkeley. I don't live in one of these far left enclaves. And yet what's happening is that many ordinary American cities and flyover country and places like North Carolina, and it seems shocking on its face, have become as overrun as those far left cities. Well, what's happening is you do have to follow the money. And it's not just the crazies in the Soros social justice wing that have as their goal the undermining of American sovereignty. Unfortunately, there are a lot of big business interests and establishment interests that are behind it as well. And people would be shocked to learn that many religious nonprofits and charities, many of them operating in North Carolina, are aiding and abetting what is essentially a criminal illegal alien smuggling conspiracy and the metastasis of these sanctuary cities, counties, and states.
And it's also law enforcement. This Mecklenburg County Sheriff, Gary McFadden, was elected in 2018, and he opted to end the program that allows ICE, state, and local law enforcement agencies to share information and work together to identify and remove illegals from the country. And Michelle, here's a guy, this guy is a sworn law enforcement officer, wears the badge, runs the Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Department, and refuses to turn over illegals who they're holding to ICE.
Yes, these are outlaws, and people who I call sanctuary anarchists really should be subject to criminal prosecution. Mm-hmm. There needs to be a public uprising against the war on immigration and customs enforcement officials. You mentioned the program involving local, state, and federal partnerships and cooperation. It's called 287G. I've been writing about it since the aftermath of the 9/11 terrorist attacks, the 18th anniversary of which we will be commemorating this week.
Right.
And it's as if there's this collective amnesia, not just on the part of these Democrats who want Medicare for all and driver's licenses and discounted in-state tuition for illegal aliens, but unfortunately too many police chiefs and sheriffs who are doing the bid of Open Borders, Inc.
Our guest is Michelle Malkin. She's the author of the very important new book, Open Borders, Inc., Who's Funding America's Destruction? We have a huge decision to make next year, Michelle. I keep saying on the radio day in and day out, there is a solution to this. There is a political answer. It comes in going to the polls and voting for Republicans whose policies reflect the common sense of most Americans. Is there any Democrat on the horizon in this crowded field of Democrat candidates for president who reflect the wisdom that is imparted in your book?
There's only one who has shown even a glimmer of common sense and logic and sanity, and that would be Tulsi Gabbard.
Right.
But she is still going to end up being held hostage to the radical amnesty forces. Every other candidate raised their hand to decriminalize border trespassing. Mm. At a time when MS-13 gang members and illegal alien rapists are running rampant in sanctuary cities, counties, and states.
You know, I've been on a theme today, and it fits into your book, and it fits into what you are alerting us about when it comes to illegals and the failure to connect the dots of illegals. This is something that the president said when he was a candidate and came down the escalator, and they've never forgiven him. They've never forgotten when he said Mexico isn't sending its best. There are rapists coming across the border. There are criminals coming across the border. And it was like from that moment on, he was branded this hate-mongering, bigoted, evil guy. And yet we see these stories of illegals committing crimes here in the streets of the United States, in North Carolina, in Florida, you know, all over the country. But there's a strategy behind it, right, Michelle? There's a concerted careful strategy to smear and vilify before you can get out of the gate. And so even common sense responses to something like not cooperating with ICE is met with the smear of bigotry and racism and hatefulness. In other words, the other side, they know precisely what they're doing, don't they?
They do. You hit the nail on the head, Mike. And I have a whole entire chapter on the Southern Poverty Law Center smear machine. Yep. I've been up against it. I'm sure you have as well. For more than a decade, any time that you give life to principles of sovereignty and the rule of law, you're deemed a hate monger. I mean, the list is so long of who is a hate speaker that, I mean, it would be a shorter list if they had one of who is not. It's ridiculous. They've gone after people of color like myself and branded us white supremacists. And I go after all of the money funding that machine as well, even at a time when the SPLC has been subject to internal complaints about discrimination and harassment. They're still quoted as if they are a credible source by the likes of CNN, MSNBC, and the New York Times.
Yeah. Your first book, Invasion, How America Still Welcomes Terrorists, Criminals, and Other Foreign Menaces, was a number one New York Times bestseller. From that book, and then seven later to this one, what's your big takeaway, Michelle, in terms of what you've gleaned through your years of studying this and writing about it? What are some conclusions in Open Borders, Inc. that you didn't reach in Invasion?
Well, I think it's more of fortification. And in Invasion, which was written after the 9/11 terrorist attack,
right,
I was really fueled by my passion. One of the things that was important to know was that it took ideological alliances on both sides to achieve this paralysis in immigration enforcement. And that's only been made clearer in the subsequent books that I've written.
Coming up,
they fight the real fights. Iran is threatening the world, and they're preoccupied with plastic straws and red meat.
A marathon debate on climate, the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook, and in it you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day. This week, Christine Blasey Ford is back in the news.
Here you have her own attorney admitting they were motivated by support for abortion.
There's hope for a sobering problem in America.
Depression is on the increase with 12 to 17-year-olds, 50 and above. We have high numbers.
The classics, now deemed offensive, find new readers.
Conservative evangelical Christians embracing the classics at the very moment that the so-called Ivy Leagues are throwing them out.
And a disturbing trend of which the media approves.
He is a 12-year-old drag performer.
All this and more. To subscribe, go to ChristianOutlook.com. That's ChristianOutlook.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. CNN recently hosted a town hall seeking to partner with the DNC in showcasing the Democratic candidates. The DNC turned down that offer, but most of the candidates still showed up. Real Clear Politics headlined its critique, CNN's climate debate hurts the candidates it tried to help. Now we know why the DNC turned it down. Here's Dennis Prager.
Grabian produced a two-minute montage of comments made in the marathon on CNN, the telethon marathon on the climate crisis. I am playing it for you as a service to the individual who is currently undergoing antidepressant treatments because he listened to this the entire time to compile it.
Would you support changing the dietary guidelines? The food pyramid. What people
yes.
Are,
yes.
To reduce red meat specifically.
Yes, I would.
Do you ban plastic straws?
Wait, so what will that mean? Will there be a tax on meat? This is the biggest question of all. At what point would Americans rise and overthrow the Democrats everywhere? My fear is that they wouldn't. What was the next one? Plastic straws? They fight the real fights. Iran is threatening the world. and they're preoccupied with plastic straws and red meat. Go ahead.
So would you ban offshore drilling?
Yes.
Just today, the Trump administration announced plans to overturn requirements on energy-saving light bulbs. Would you reinstate those requirements?
If you can get electricity from a light bulb that utilizes one-tenth of the power that an old incandescent light bulb used, of course you're going to do that.
We have to take combustion engine vehicles off the road as rapidly as we can.
I think especially in poor countries around the world where women do not necessarily want to have large numbers of babies and where they can have the opportunity through birth control to control the number of kids they have, something I very, very strongly support.
Population control. Because why? Why? Because humans... How do we pollute the planet? Through flatulence? I'm not joking. How do we pollute the planet? We use fossil fuel. That's how we pollute the planet? We eat red meat? Does Bernie Sanders have children? He does? He has a son? Did he impose a gender identity on him at birth? Would he do so again? Is he woke enough today to suggest to his son, if he has a child, do not impose a gender identity at birth? That should be asked of them. Do you think parents should impose a gender identity at birth or let a child choose as it grows older? That would be a great question to ask any Democrat running.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producers Charlie Richards, David Posian, Michael Cook, Adam Ramsey, Ben Brigman, and of course, Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsors, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.